Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN. I'm David Dye.
The Americana duo of Gillian Welch and David Rawlings finally released the latest Gillian Welch album, The Harrow and the Harvest, in June of this year on their own Acony record label. 8 years after her previous album, Soul Journey, came out in 2003. Between those records, David Rawlings put out his first solo album as the David Rawlings Machine. I started out our interview, which was engineered and the performances were recorded at WFUV in New York City, by empathizing with them about the problems the delay caused for them.
I know that when this finally came out, it was kind of a relief to have it out. And it's funny, that one of the reasons I know that is, Gil, when you and David were here with David's record, the David Rawlings Machine, I made a very clear point of not asking you about your record. And the reason why I did is your body language was, don't ask me about this record. Don't ask me about it.
I think it was tattooed on my forehead.
That must have been a lot to kind of live with for a while.
I should have made up lapel pins that said, please don't ask. because we were so tired of, you know, how many years. It's truly, it was like an absurd play. You know, like how many years can you keep telling people, oh, we're working on it? And it was true, you know. I've kind of said it before, but it isn't like we took time off. It isn't like we took a vacation. I wish I could tell you that we took a fantastic, like, 6-year tropical vacation, but that's not what happened. I don't really have any regret now that we've sort of come out the other side with it. In fact, I think the arduousness and the difficulty of writing this record and getting it finished has certainly brought us to where we are now. And it sounds kind of corny, but I know that we learn things. For one thing, almost any other person, would have looked seriously about changing careers. Because when you don't do what you supposedly do for 8 years, you really have to look at it and say, is this really what I do? Is this what I do? And despite all that and our misery and our getting nowhereness, we realized that there was absolutely nothing else we could do or wanted to do. And I kind of, you know, am talking to you now with the confidence, the self-confidence, that knowing that we're lifers, you know, we're really in this for life no matter what happens. And it's kind of a good place to be as an artist, to realize that, that no, it kind of doesn't matter how awful it gets. this is what we do.
But to sort of bring it around to what your one of your initial comments, one of the results of this long fallow period was that when we got around to recording, it had been a while since we'd been on the road regularly, and there'd been a very intensive period of a few months of writing and maybe a sort of, I mean, of a productive few months of writing, and then probably a year before that where there was a lot of writing going on. And we'd gotten to a place where some of the playing was very, very personal and introspective. And I was happy to see some of that translate into performance, you know, performances on record that I thought were closer to the sound of us, say, sitting in a living room playing a song than we'd ever captured before.
Mm. Yeah. I think that comes across. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there was one song that kind of stayed with you throughout this period of being in the weeds. Is that the way it goes?
The way it will be.
The way it will be, right.
The way it will be is the song that got written around the time of Soul Journey. It's the only song from that time period that stuck around with us.
Yeah, we sort of knew even at the time. It actually predates Soul Journey, the recording session, slightly. It was finished right at the end of the year, right around the holidays before I think we recorded Soul Journey in February or March. And
we kind of knew from the beginning that it was
the start of
another thing, that it had no business on Soul Journey. Mm. And kind of thought from the beginning that it was the first glimpse of a new kind of duet direction for us.
Well, yeah, we knew there was a new train sort of coming down the track. We just didn't know that the arrival
was slow it was moving.
I think I could. I think I can. Is it possible to do that one?
It is. We'll let's stand up and move to our place.
I lost you a while ago. Still, I don't know why. Say your name, that a crow flying by. Gotta watch my back now that you turn me around. Got me walking backwards into my to be.
That is one of the minor key tunes, The Way It Will Be, from The Harrow in the Heart, Gillian Welch and David Rawlings playing live for us today on The Cafe. And as we mentioned, one of the, well, the first song deemed includable on the new album.
Yeah.
One of the things I was reading is about how many of these songs were written in various places. And is that just a fact of the matter that you guys travel a lot? Or is there something about writing in specific places that makes a difference?
I think in part we just kind of had to get out of Nashville for a little while. We've been there just about 20 years. We had gone a little stale with it or something. It was so exciting when we moved there and so inspiring. And, you know, the deep well of traditional American music and country music that's there somehow had just sort of, I don't know, it wasn't as immediate to us anymore. So we left for a little while. To a certain degree, you know, travel always makes you think about your home. One of the things that traveling does is it gives you a whole new perspective on where you actually live. And I think that's what happened to us, is it just everywhere we went, you know, what was actually going on in our heads was we were thinking about Tennessee and Nashville and the South and everything that had inspired us and had worked for us when we started, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. I'm glad to hear that explanation, because you definitely hear all this about the South on the record. And then I was reading, well, you know, Glenwood Springs, which I know is in Colorado. That was one of the places that, you know, some things were written. So that's definitely. Well,
that was just that was an overnight. You know, that was some place we were. I think that was the song "Hard Times," which had been. Gillian had started that song during the sessions for my record, for the Dave Rawlings Machine record, and we were very excited because Levon Helm had planned on coming. He was ending a tour in Arkansas, I think, and he was going to be traveling back up to his home in Woodstock, and he was going to pull the bus up at the studio and stay for a day or two and play some drums for my record. And the night before he was scheduled to come in, I know that, you know, we were both excited about it. And Gil thought, well, she started to write a song that she thought Levon would like, you know, and just in that way that you're inspired by someone. And
I do this all the time. It's actually, it works great for me. It's not uncommon for me to think, God, I wish I could write a song that, you know, so-and-so would really like. That's how, I like Barroom Girls was supposed to be a song that I thought Towns would like.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
But Levon didn't end up.
No, Levon got laryngitis.
He got laryngitis, and they had to, they didn't know what was happening, and because he's had some, you know, medical issues. As soon as he has problems with his voice or his throat, he got straight back home. But so then there was this little piece of a song, and we worked on it for a while and then didn't get very far with it. And then sort of as we entered the phase where we started writing stuff we liked more, that crossed my mind in Glenwood Springs.
Dave did his magical trick of the two of us. Dave is really, he's kind of more of our chorus guy. You know, he's got more of a, he's pitched his tent more in the rock and roll camp than I have. And so we were sitting there and the song hadn't really gone anywhere. And I guess Dave woke up and...
It was late at night.
It was late at night.
I went down with the banjo and I remembered it. And I played it as I remembered it. And this often happens. I remembered it wrong, but my misremembering was an improvement. I'd sort of changed the chord rhythm and it all of a sudden felt pretty good. And then I think the next day I showed it to Gil what I had done. And I said, I mean, if it was my song, I'd just have a chorus here that went like this.
Yeah, presto. know, Then we had a chorus. Just repeat the line. Just repeat it.
Well, why don't you guys do that one? That's a
okay.
That's
okay.
Great.
Okay.
There was a Cape Town man who used to plow and sing, and he loved that mule, and a mule loved him. When the day got long, as it does about now, I'd hear him singing to his muley cow, calling, come on, my sweet old girl. And I'd bet the whole damn world that we're gonna make it, yeah, to the end of the road. Singing high times ain't gonna ruin my mind. High times ain't gonna ruin my mind, Bessie. High times ain't gonna ruin my mind no more. He said it's me. Supping on tears, and we're supping on wine. We all get to heaven in our own sweet time. So come on, you Asheville boys, and turn up your old time noise.
Hard Times, a really wonderful performance from Gillian Welch and David Rawlings, who are our guests today on the cafe. Two things I wanted to kind of pick up on, and one of them what's kind of in the development of this record, or just because I kind of see what you guys do as kind of a seamless thing between the two of you. What role did David's record have in all of it, the David Rawlings Machine record?
It was definitely part of moving towards kind of getting back on the horse, which we had guessed that it would.
It was sort of there were a couple functions, and you had a couple a couple questions, and there's a couple points to this. One was when the song Ruby got written, and Sweet Tooth, I think a little bit before that, and Bells of Harlem had gotten started, and we'd started to write some of the songs for that record, and I guess with my producer hat on, I was aware that this was material that we liked and that was maybe of higher quality than the stuff that we'd been,
which was a good sign,
rejecting.
And they were the first songs in a while that we'd written that we liked.
Right.
So this was good.
But Ruby we knew, and Sweet Tooth actually, that we wanted to have me sing them. And I was aware I had a few other things in the vault, not recorded, but the songs that I'd written with other people, the song I wrote with Ryan Adams, To Be Young, and I Hear Them All with Ketch Secor of Old Crow Medicine Show, that I was interested in doing performances of, that I had sung live, but I wanted to maybe make a recording. And as hard of a decision as it was to make to delay Gillian's already greatly delayed record, additionally, I didn't think that we were quite there yet, but it felt like we were closer. And I thought, well, if we make this record and we don't have to, you know, we can continue working on songs for that, and we can write a few more songs for mine, but we can sort of fill mine out with some older stuff. And, you know, we sort of used it as a little bit of a stopgap. And also then we got the added advantage of, after we toured that material, done the machine tour, that we brought some stuff back from that to our own performances and to our sort of more regular writing, I think.
Hmm. Yeah.
So it was...
Well, also, Dave's not saying it, but it had been so long since we'd recorded that he kind of took it for the team. You know, I felt like we were so cold as recording artists, you know, because that's a different skill. Playing in the studio, that's different than playing on stage. And we were so out of it that he thought that it would be like too much to bear to go in so cold trying to make my record. So that was the other reason, was
yeah,
to
I guess
go
so.
In and make his record. He kind of threw his record under the bus, you know.
I mean, we had a little bit of we'd always wanted to make a record. And then, you know, when you get done with one, you feel very facile with that part of the process. And then you immediately don't do it for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And so it seemed like because we would tour less on my record and give it less attention in that way, that it would get us in the studio quicker, which ended up happening. And it was part of the reason why the recording for The Harrow and the Harvest went so quickly and was done in basically a month, you know?
Yeah.
You know, listening to you talk about this, I read somewhere, and Gil, you can disavow this, but I think you said something about the two of you are always thinking about music. Is that true?
Yeah, that's pretty much true. I mean, you know, we talk about other things, you know. We might might talk about cowboy boots, and might talk about sushi or something, you know. But pretty much
cowboy
we're,
boots and sushi. I love that those are the two.
They come up. It comes up. You know, might talk about Shakespeare. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I look around and, you know, there's other people who, I don't know, how can I put this? You know, lots of other people seem to have time for hobbies and other things that they do. And we just kind of listen to music and talk about music and play music and write music and then go hear other people play music. Like we're doing right now, we're talking about music, which is, as it turns out, is not the easiest thing in the world to do. But nevertheless, we try.
Yeah, you're contributing to our marriage.
Yeah, it's all my fault. Gillian Welch and David Rawlings are our guests, and I don't want to keep you guys too much longer, and you were mentioning The Way It Goes.
Yeah. I guess the most morbid song on the record. I think we have the highest death count.
Yeah, Gil, I think it was on Fresh Air where you said that this album is 10 different kinds of sad.
Yeah, that was Dave's genius quote. And, you know, to me, they're all different shades of, you know, different kinds of loss and regret and melancholy. And, you know, it's a, if all of them are blue, it's like, well, blue is such a beautiful color. You know, why not explore all the different beautiful variations of it? People seem cool with that. Like, a lot of people like blue. And it's really been heartening. The other thing that there was a big question mark for me before we took all these somewhat sad songs out into the world was like, what was going to happen in the show? You know, was it just going to be depressing? And happily now we've, you know, played whatever, 60 shows. And the word is that people leave smiling. So,
so we're going to continue to push our luck and see how far we can take it.
And this is The Way It Goes.
Okay.
Awesome.
Johnson by the farm, put a needle in her arm. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. And her brother laid her down in the cold Kentucky ground. That's the way that it goes, that's the way. That's the way.
there you go with an up-tempo kind of sad from The Harrow and the Harvest, from Gillian Welch and David Rawlings. It's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, David. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia. If you'd like to hear more of our World Cafe sessions and get daily cafe alerts, you can sign up at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks for spending your time with the World Cafe.